I'm Darren Levy, and this is Citywide, airing every Tuesday evening from 7:30 to 8 p.m. right here on WNYU 89.1 FM New York and WNYU.org, New York University Radio. Citywide features insight from some of New York's most innovative artists. Today we are talking with Tyler Fire. He will be performing this Thursday at Irving Plaza for Jerry Ramone's birthday bash. Tyler is a professional daredevil who swallows swords, eats fire, and performs other amazing feats. And now, here to talk with us is Tyler. Thank you very much for joining us here on Citywide.
All right, great to be here, Darren.
Tell us about what you do.
So, my name is Tyler Fire, and I work in the carnival in the traveling sideshow.
And what are some of your talents? What do you do in the sideshow?
I eat fire and I swallow swords. I'm the MC or the ringmaster on the show, but when you're on a sideshow, call that person the inside lecturer or the professor. Sounds so official.
Why do you call him the professor? Just because it sounds official?
It does. It sounds like a great title, right? It's wild in carnival lingo. We've created all these different titles for ourselves that really mean nothing if you were to try and explain it outside of the sideshow world. Like the person that you'd first see when you walk up to a show on the Midway. You see the guy out front you picture in the straw hat with the cane saying, "Hurry, hurry, hurry, folks, you're just in time." That guy. Well, now, most folks call that guy a barker. In the sideshow, that's like an insult. You call someone a barker. Oh, he's a barker. That means, you know, oh. you wouldn't want to say that. So we call that guy the outside talker. Oh. Outside talker is his real job title. But, man, you tell someone, hey, I'm an outside talker. What does that mean? That sounds like a ridiculous job.
Are there any other titles I have to be aware of to not call anybody?
Let's see. I don't know. The freak word goes either way these days. You know, like it's taken so many transformations over the years. Like it started off all bad. It cost Todd Browning, one of the great film directors of the 30s, cost him his whole career. He made this movie Freaks after making all these other kick-ass movies, right? Yeah, he does Freaks, a 32-minute film. That's it. He's done for life. So that film comes back in the 60s, and now everyone's, oh, Todd Browning's a hero. He made Freaks. That's so cool, you know? But now that cost him his career. So Freaks was like a bad word. But then in the 60s, it became cool, you know? Like, oh, freaky, man. Mm-hmm. And then now it's taken this whole other turn where, like, kids that, are angry and hate their parents, and everyone brings it on, like, yeah, I'm a freak. It's like, well, really, you're just wearing makeup. That's mm-hmm. not being a freak. You know, if you're born with flippers for arms, that makes you a freak. And if you're using your flippers for arms to make yourself a fortune in show business, then those people are always happy to call themselves freaks because they're happy people. They're rich and famous.
Would you consider yourself freaky in any way?
No, see, I'm not a freak on the show. I'm the straight man on the show. I'm like the go-between between the audience that tells them about the world of the wild, the weird, and the wonderful, and kind of lures them inside because it's like I'm one of them. It's like I'm saying, no, yeah, it's weird, it's strange, and it's bizarre, but it's okay. You just come in, you sit in the seats, nothing jumps out at you. It's clean, it's safe, and you'll like it.
So you're the straight man who swallows swords and does other amazing feats. Yeah, I was looking at your resume online, and I realized you do other things like the human blockhead. What exactly is that?
So the human blockhead's an old-timey sideshow classic. It was named, it's got a great story how the act came about its name, but what the act really is, Darren, is taking a giant nail like a railroad spike and pounding it directly into the center of your skull.
Do you have any idea how the idea of that first came about?
As it happens, Darren, that's the easiest act of them all to explain how I ended up learning that I could pound nails into the center of my head. So normal kids at the dinner table will laugh and squirt milk out their nose, right? This happens all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I'd laugh at the dinner table and shoot spaghetti and meatballs out my nose.
So you're born with this talent.
Well, you could call it a talent. I like to think of it that way. But really, no, everyone has the same passage, and mine was just born bigger. You know, I could have been born with a lot of things enormous. Happens for me, it's the passage in my nose.
So not everybody is able to do these sideshow acts that you're able to do.
You know, a certain amount of it definitely comes with years of training and hard work. But, you know, a little God-given ability never hurt anybody.
How about the bed of nails? That's another trick you do. What's that?
Well, you know, I don't like to think of it as a trick so much, Darren. Trick implies that, like, there's an easy way to do it that wouldn't hurt. Yeah, as it happens with the bed of nails, there's really no way to do it that doesn't hurt.
What exactly is the bed of nails? Could you describe it a little bit?
Yeah, bed of nails is, man, it's just what you think. It's like a, it's a grid of sharpened steel spikes pointing up, which I recline on the bed of razor sharp nails. And man, we just wrote a new act for my traveling show, The Lucky Devil Circus Sideshow, which we're using the bed of nails as our closer now. And man, we just premiered this act when we were up in Maine on a motorcycle convention. So we come out and we've got the bed of nails. It's 966 razor sharp poison tip nails. Well, they're not really poison tip, but they are razor sharp. So we got the bed of nails, and it's all gleaming and glowing under the stage lights, right? And I lay out on the bed of nails, and Magic Brian, he comes over. He puts a watermelon on top of my chest, and he saws the watermelon in half on top of me. We take a cinder block, put that on top, put the watermelon on top of the cinder block, and then smash the whole thing to pieces. It sent watermelon and cement flying a good 50 feet out into the room. Because that's what we like to give our fans, you know, a souvenir to take home from the show.
How much practice does all that take?
You know, it definitely takes practice. For all that we goof around about, oh, it's just fun and goofy now. Like the show, we spend serious hours practicing, writing new material, working on new acts. Not that it's not a blast. We love it, you know. But for the watermelon rehearsals, it was really a lot of trouble because it was early spring in New York City and watermelons cost $15 each. Before they're in season. So, you know, we tried to rehearse it as best we could without going through too many watermelons.
So were there any times you've had any close calls?
Close calls and accidents, the injury report. Oh, my goodness, yes. You know, I really think that sideshow on circus, for as dangerous as it is, it's really like working a factory job. You know, you're working with giant dangerous machines, and if you know what you're doing and if you pay attention, you'll probably be fine for the rest of your life. But nonetheless, when you're working with machines, the ones in the junkyard that cut cars in half, you know, there's a whole lot of potential for injury. Well, Darren, when you're sticking swords down your throat and drinking gasoline every day, there's a lot of potential for injury there, too.
You ever get sick from all that drinking gasoline? Or I saw you eat a lit cigarette on the David Letterman show.
Man, I got so sick eating that cigarette on Letterman. Boy, you know, normally I take real good care of myself and I stay fine, but the Letterman thing was a total fluke. I was asleep and my girlfriend came and woke me up and said, Tyler, the phone's for you, and try and sound like you didn't just wake up, it's your agent. And I said, oh, okay, sure, you know, hey, hi, how you doing, right? And I said, hey, Tyler, can you eat anything funny? Like, what? Can you eat anything funny? So I don't know what to say. I go out, I walk the dog, I come back. I'm like, yeah, listen, I've got this cigarette eating act I wrote when they changed the smoking laws here in New York. It'll be perfect. They'll love it, you know? So he's like, okay, great. Come into the studio right now. I'm like, oh. Oh, yeah, sure. I'll be right there, you know? So I take a shower. I try and pull myself together. I don't have any cigarettes in the house. So I got to go out scouring New York for Lucky Strikes that don't have filters on them, which aren't cool anymore, I guess. But whatever. I found them. I go into the studio, and I'm full-on, like, 2 hours late for my day at David Letterman. So you think, like, you get all excited when you get a phone call, and, like, the coolest thing you could do is show up 2 hours late. Man, it didn't feel cool at all. Aww. So I walk in and shake everyone's hand, and that's cool. And they're like, hey, okay, let's see your act. So I start eating cigarettes, and I got this whole thing with patter, and I'm eating cigarette after cigarette after cigarette. And they're like, okay, yeah. So cut all your talking out, and can you just eat a cigarette? Mm. I'm like, okay, so I've just eaten, like, 5 cigarettes, right? So, like, start over. So I come in, and I eat another cigarette, and I drink some water. I swallow it. They're like, okay, that was good. Now do it without the water. I'm like, well, the water's how I swallow it. Cigarettes are dry. And it's like, yeah, it'll look fake. Do it without the water. So I'm like, all right. So I come back in. I eat another cigarette, right? I swallow it without the water. I haven't even had my breakfast yet. I got woken up to this phone call, and I'm like, well, it's David Letterman. Of course I'm going to go. So I rush. I get there. So now I've eaten, what, like 7 cigarettes? I haven't had any breakfast yet. So there's just 7 cigarettes, like, floating around eating the inside of my belly. And then I get, like, 2 hours to chill in the green room, which is cool and everything. It's great hanging out in the green room over at the David Letterman show. I'm hanging out with Todd Rundgren. All these people keep coming out. Ball Schaefer's cool as can be. You know, it's cool. But I've just got all these cigarettes, like, percolating in my belly. So I've already got that. And then a little time to get nervous on top of it of 2 hours of, hey, why don't you just sit here and wait? And then after you're done waiting, we're going to give you 10 seconds to an audience of the entire world. So you got 10 seconds to be great or look like an idiot. So yeah, I got all that going for me. And my moment comes up. I go on stage and I'm like, man, the last thing in the world I want to do right now is eat another cigarette. But it was cool. It was a blast. I had a lot of fun that day.
Well, it looked great. Is there any trick you could share for our listeners on how to do something?
Ooh, that's a great question, Darren. Let's see. What can we describe over the radio that'll look cool, be a cool trick, be dangerous, and yet probably won't kill anyone? I don't know. That's a great question. I got to say, so many interviews sound exactly alike, the list of questions I got. And Darren, that's 100% first of like, can you explain something cool in like a 10-second introduction over the radio? I don't know. Let me think about that and we'll get back to it before
the end of it.
We'll
get back.
It'll be like our big closer. Stay tuned and find out how to do something ridiculous.
So what's your most embarrassing moment on stage?
Oh, man, most embarrassing moment on stage. It seems like there'd be so many, but I can't believe I'm going to tell you this. I happen to have had a really good one this weekend.
Okay.
I'd like to preface this by saying I do a lot of shows, so I guess it was bound to happen eventually. I read the statistics in backstage the other day, and I realized I've done more shows in New York than a chorus line performed in its entire run on Broadway. So I'm out there a lot, and that means, you know, like I end up working on no sleep and no meals all the time. But the story I'm about to tell you, really, I've got almost no excuse at all. So it's great. I'm doing this photo shoot. It's like an industrial thing. This company released a new kind of camera, and they figured they'd hire some cool people for all the new photographers to take pictures of. So I go, and it's all these like fancy people around me taking pictures with brand new $30,000 cameras, and I'm just eye candy there, and that's cool. I'm having a great time. And so I'm swallowing my swords, and the guy points to a sword on my swordboard, and he says, hey, how about that sword? You swallow that one? I'm like, yeah, I can swallow that one. Now, it's not in my normal set, but I can swallow it, so I figure I'm having fun. Why not? I grab it. It's got just a little bit of a curve to it. So I swallow it. I twist just a little bit. No, it's cool. And then I get an idea. Hey, you know what would look cool? If I curve my mouth, like, right down into the camera. You know, so I'm going for this new position, and I'm pushing the sword down my throat. Now, it was the day after Cinco de Mayo, so I'd definitely been out drinking tequila for pretty much the whole entire evening before. But that's cool. I take no excuses. I brought this one on myself. I'm swallowing the sword in kind of a funky position, and I hit some magic little button there, and I created an eruption of tomato soup that rocketed out all the way up from the depths of inside me, right in front of this whole room full of people. But you know, the thing about that is, I think, oh my God, you know, what are they going to think? Everyone looks up and they goes, wow, that was incredible.
You have any idea how many people in the world there are that can do what you do?
I have a little bit of an idea. I know a good bit of the circus and sideshow community. It's a tight-knit world out there for the most part. You know, I'm proud to claim so many people in the industry as my friends are all such great people. It's a fun crowd to be around, and I love it. I know there's, 64 working sword swallowers in the world today, which sounds like, oh, I didn't even know there were 64 sword swallowers. But then you map that out of like 8, what are we up to? How many people live on the planet now, Darren?
Probably like 6 or 7 billion.
Yeah, so I guess that's kind of, you know, it's like, 10 in a billion? What's that? Right. 1 in 100 million odds of being a sword swallower. So that's kind of cool. But as it happens, right here in New York City, there's 6 of us. It's the highest concentration of sword swallowers anywhere in the world.
Wow. Well, what do you think brings sword swallowers to New York?
I think it's because it's the greatest city in the world.
That's a great answer. I know you went to NYU.
I did go to NYU.
What was your major there?
I majored in playwriting. Man, that wasn't what it officially said. What was it? It was the dramatic writing program at Tisch.
How long ago was that?
So I finished classes in 98, but I think I didn't get my degree until officially the January of 99. A little incomplete. I had to finish up there.
So what made you want to go from studying at NYU to becoming a professional sword swallower and sideshow?
As it happens, NYU did play a crucial part in me ending up in the life of sideshow. But if we can, I'd like to tell a little story about NYU.
Sure.
Because when I applied for NYU, you know, back when I was in high school and I was looking at all these different colleges, they sent me this package. And, you know, maybe similar to the package they still send out today. But it was, you know, like a bunch of pictures and folders and telling me all this stuff about what the school is and course catalogs and all that. But then there's this video, right? And the video says on the front, location, location, location. And it's this video. It's, you know, like a promo reel, but it's a video about how NYU's cool. And it's based entirely on location. We're located in the heart of historic Greenwich Village, the cultural arts capital of the entire world, surrounded by amazing cultural arts institutions like The Bottom Line, legendary nightclub, CBGB's, right? Legendary nightclub. The Palladium, legendary nightclub, like all this amazing stuff. The Pat Field store, amazing fashion designer, all this stuff, it's right there. It's right. You go to NYU, you're in the heart of all this amazing stuff. And I did, and I loved it, right? Like, it was probably my favorite part, or made the most difference of going here, was in fact what they said of just being in the middle of all that. And like, the people you end up randomly meeting and the connections you happen to have made can make a world of difference afterwards when you're in entertainment industry trying to get a job. But then I think it's so fascinating that after all that, after like the location pitch, which I totally bought and I totally believe, that then NYU has closed down the Bottom Line nightclub and is in the process of maybe driving CBGB's and the CB's Gallery out of their location, and the Palladium is now dorms, and Pat Fields is now gone. And it's just, you know, like, it's a fascinating angle to look at it. However, I'm totally grateful that I did in fact go here, because the location made a huge difference. But that wasn't the question you asked me at all. Didn't you ask me some totally other question?
Yeah, the question was, how did you go from being an NYU student to performing sideshow?
Right. So I went to NYU for playwriting, and that's cool. But I realized that probably wasn't going to work out for me in the long run. It's too much time, like, at home all by myself writing, and I was starting to go all like crazy, like The Shining. So I took some other classes, and I took one on the experimental theater wing called Street Theater. And when I was there, I met these amazing people. I met Todd Robbins, who's the chairman of the board at the Coney Island Circus Sideshow, and I saw him do a little bit of his performance and was amazed by that. And I met Jennifer Miller, who was the bearded lady on the Coney Island Sideshow many moons ago. And she's an amazing woman. So I just barely like tapped into that little world a little bit, but was fascinated by it. And then I went on to take the class I'd been trying to take my entire time at NYU, which was Circus by Hovey Burgess over in the grad acting school. I don't even know if he's still here, but Hovey's an amazing guy. So I took Hovey's circus class. They kept trying to talk me out of it. No, what's circus going to do for you, kid? Don't take a circus class. Take another writing class. That's what you need. You're in the writing school. And I'm like, no, I really want to take the circus class. And he's like, no, don't take the circus. So I listen. And I'm like, forget it, man. I want to take the circus class. So I took it. And Hovey Burgess, this old-timey circus guy, he's just amazing. He's born into a circus family and traveled on circuses his whole life. Hovey taught me how to juggle and how to balance things and how to walk on the tightrope and do trapeze. And, you know, it was a mind-blowing experience. And through that, I got to meet other circus-minded folk. And I met a guy who taught me the basics on fire eating. And that was a wild day, because he told me how to do it. And man, I'd never recommend anyone else learning this way. This will be the how not to learn how to eat fire. We'll get to how to do a cool trick a little later. But so he tells me all this stuff. Well, you make your torches like this, you use this for your fuel, you do this, and he gives me a book, right? But he said, oh, don't believe everything in the book. You know, you got to do this and this and this and this and this, and you know, it'll probably work out okay. So I say, all right. So I go home and I make torches, and I dip them in the fuel and I fire it up, and I look at it. I'm holding the torch in my hand out in front of my face, and I'm thinking, putting this lit torch in my mouth, this is the most ridiculous thing you could think to do. But, you know, I got over that. So I went for it once and twice and again, and eventually it got a little easier. But yeah, that whole moment was, you know, in a way, NYU inspired, because that's how I met Josh.
Did you injure yourself that first time swallowing fire?
You know, it must not have been bad, because I don't specifically remember it. But then at the same time, I can't imagine not having burned myself either.
I'm Darren Levy, and you're listening to Citywide on WNYU 89.1 FM New York, and I'm talking with Tyler Fire, who is a death-defying daredevil entertainer.
Thank you, Darren.
What makes a sideshow an artist?
Sideshow an artist. What makes a sideshow performer an artist? You know, that's really a personal thing. I don't know if you can say that all sideshow performers are artists. I don't know if you can say all painters are artists, or all of anyone's artists. I think that's really comes from inside the person and how they want their performance to come out there. I mean, there's a lot of folks working, especially in the carnival world, who wouldn't take kindly to being called an artist so much. They'd like, man, they've got a job. They're on the carnival. And these guys are working incredibly hard. I mean, and if you're on a real carnival show, like a traveling tent show that plays fairs and state fairs and county fairs and midways and stuff like that. So you're going to drive, oh, hey, maybe it's a good day. You're only driving 12 hours till you get there, right? And you get there and you're going to pound tent stakes and you're going to unroll canvas and you're going to set up a tent. You're going to unload a whole bunch of trucks and you're going to set up a stage. You're going to wire the PA, hang the canvas banners, all that stuff, right? And by the time you get all that done, it's time for you to change into your costume and go on stage. So you're going to go on stage. Maybe you're going to swallow swords 10, 20, maybe 30 times. Maybe it's a holiday. Maybe you're going to swallow swords 40 or 50 times that day, right? And at the end of the day, you're going to go and sleep in the back of a truck. And you're going to get up early and you're going to do it again the next day. And maybe the next day, if it's a holiday weekend, maybe not. Maybe as soon as you finish your 20th show of the day, you're going to tear the tent down, load the trucks, and drive overnight to your next town. I mean, in a way, you could say that life itself, the life itself is art, right? Absolutely. Or you can take it and say, you know, that's like, man, a really hardworking, really cool, really dedicated person.
Would you consider yourself an artist?
I like to think I'm right in between those two. I like to think that, you know, I mean, I've certainly pounded tent stakes and I've certainly slept in the back of trucks. But I've also, you know, worked a little of the higher end, fancier jobs. And my comfort zone is really right in between there. I don't like sleeping in the back of trucks anymore. But I like feeling like I have a regular job. You know, like I show up, I do shows. That's my job.
Now, who are some of the people you've performed with at your job?
So some of the other artists or dedicated truck sleepers that I've worked with. Oh, man, I feel so lucky because there's so many people that I wanted to meet in the business and that I've gotten to be on stage with at the same time. It's such a cool moment. I had a great one last year when another show came through Seaside Heights, New Jersey, and I got to go and do some shows with them. And it was just a blast, a beautiful canvas big top show called the Brothers Grimm Sideshow. And it's owned by Ken Hark, who for the older NYU grad students, maybe used to be the drummer from Badfinger, this kick-ass 70s rock band. So, yeah, so we've got an old rock star for our boss. The show is beautiful. It's 100 feet of canvas banner line. And the cast of the show is Zamora the Torture King, who was out on the first ever Jim Rose Circus Sideshow tour back from that golden era when that show was at its best. The Enigma, also from that same era, the blue puzzle piece guy. You might have seen him on X-Files now. His wife, Cats and the Tiger Lady, tattooed in tiger stripes all over her body. William Dark, the head of the Performers Guild down in Key West, Florida. And Slymenstra Hyman from GWAR. That's the cast of the show. So I get to go down and be in the show with them. And I'm like, man, this is awesome. What better? It's the ultimate sideshow dream cast. So, you know, that's incredible. The Coney Island cast over the years have been amazing. Eek the Geek, the totally tattooed man. He's awesome. I just talked to him on my way in here tonight. Insectivora, the bug-eating babe out there. She's an amazing person. Who else have we had? Artie Flash was the first tattooed man I worked with out there. Then there's Jennifer Miller, the bearded lady. We've had guest performers come through. Matt Fraser, the seal boy. He's got little arms that grow like flippers off the side of his body. He's a rock and roll drummer in his spare time with his little hands. He was just in New York a few months ago on an off-Broadway play. He lives over in London. So he's amazing. Gotten to do a little bit of rock and roll, which is lots of fun for me. I love the rock and roll crowds. The rock and roll audiences are a blast. And going out and opening for bands is a real thrill. I got to do the Taste of Chaos tour this year with Killswitch Engage and The Used and My Chemical Romance. And that was a lot of fun.
So you perform with a lot of rock bands. What makes Sideshow go so well with rock?
Well, the whole entertainment world has changed so much since sideshows were at their heyday, which is probably like back in the 40s. And just think of what entertainment was like in the 40s. Not everybody had a TV in their house. You know, people are still listening to the Lone Ranger on the radio. So, I mean, as back in the era when people went to the circus to see animals because you'd never seen a giraffe before, might not have a zoo in your town, you wouldn't have seen a giraffe on TV, you know? So when the carnival came to town and when the sideshow came to town, it was an amazing thing. It was like half museum and half entertainment at the same time. It was genuinely a chance to see something you'd never seen before and would probably never see again. Well, now, Darren, it's just not like that anymore. You know, you can go on these websites and, oh my goodness, it's amazing the things I see to entertain myself during the day. Television has this whole other world of stuff going on. And so, you know, trying to, it's not that the sideshows were trying to shock people back in the day. It wasn't such like a shock, shock, shock. I mean, definitely trying to sell tickets and grab their attention. But, you know, it's really transformed into, well, you've got to shock your audience in order to get them. And so that's a whole other world of entertainment. It's a whole different spin that's come on over it now. But, you know, it's still about making people happy, and the crowds that seem so receptive to it and have that great energy that are up for being wowed and enthused about seeing something crazy on stage. Well, the rock and roll kids just have this awesome energy that they bring into a room. So it makes it so much fun to be in a sideshow that's performing to that crowd that gets so fired up over rock and roll. And the rock and roll kids just love it too. So it's a really nice pairing up.
So what is the most enjoyable thing about being a sideshow and being able to make everyone have so much fun?
Darren, I think you really just said it. I mean, my job when I go to work is to make people happy. So it's, you know, I mean, it's definitely hard work. We definitely work long hours and the body goes through enormous and ridiculous things to make it happen. But man, at the end of the day, when you think, well, what did I do today? Let me see. I made 10,000 people scream and go out of their mind because they saw something they'd never seen before and they loved it. You know, that's a really good day.
Well, we're going to need to wrap up soon, so would you like to go back to that question I asked you earlier about a trick you could describe for our listeners?
I'd absolutely like to go back to a trick I could describe for your listeners. Here's a great trick, and this goes into one of my favorite kinds of entertainment. It's like bar magic. It's like what you do just when you're out with your friends for fun, and you think you don't have anything in your pockets, but yet all of a sudden you want to do something. Here's the one, right? It's harder in New York now because you can't smoke anywhere anymore, but in a way it makes it that much more dangerous. So here's what you do. You don't even have to smoke to do this trick. I don't smoke anymore, but it's still fun, right? So you take a cigarette, or you can take a cigarette away from someone else. It's probably funnier if you do it that way, right? If you take someone else's cigarette and you can put their cigarette out on your tongue, which is gruesome, right? And shocking, especially if you're not expecting it. Someone plucks a cigarette out of your mouth and then puts it out on their tongue, right? So here's how you do it. It's not that hard. Yeah, you can burn yourself, but really, if you make your friends laugh, isn't it worth it? Okay, so here's what you do, right? So you want to pool up a little bit of saliva right there in the center of your tongue. And you just do this by, man, if you can't figure out how to do that, I guess you're lost for the rest of the trick anyway. So you pull up a little bit of saliva in the center of your tongue and you stick your tongue out, and right away you just start dabbing the cigarette out. And if you start in the pool of spit, that puts most of it out. And that you're almost all the way there. But then when you put it out the rest of the way, move it around and hit some other spots on your tongue. So if it is still lit, you'll only get a bunch of little burns and not one really big one.
Great. Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, thank you.
Tyler Fire will be performing at Irving Plaza this Thursday, the 19th, for Jerry Ramone's birthday bash with the Lucky Devil Circus. For a list of all his shows, visit www.luckydevilcircussideshow.com. That's www.luckydevilcircussideshow.com, or you can visit www.tylerfire.com. That's www.tylerfyre.com. That's it for Citywide. I'm Darren Levy. You can email your comments about today's show to citywide@wnyu.org. Visit Citywide on the web at wnyu.org/citywide. Tune in again next week for more Arts Talk right here on WNYU 89.1 FM New York and WNYU.org, New York University Radio. Citywide is a production of WNYU News. Now stay tuned for experimental acoustic music up next with Crumb Show on Outside.